Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power, and this is Donna Sebo, your host today. I am really looking forward to this program. If you're an inventor, if you are an individual that feels like you in some way can make this world a better place by an idea, a concept, my guest today is a man that you're going to want to listen to because he has taken the time to do something that I have not known of anybody else to really get involved with other than the federal government. And it's his book, The Patent Jungle, The Inventor's Friendly User Guide. Leon Cooper is my guest. And Leon, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Really looking forward to our chat. I'm confident that the information you and I are going to provide will help people such as you just described. We have an idea for a product or an invention that will, let's say, serve the human condition, introduce important technologies that allows our nation to advance, and do other things that will help the world make the world a better place.
Leon, you're a man that has quite a phenomenal background. You're an inventor yourself. But you also have been very much involved in the military. You have been involved with the making of a movie, Tarawa, the Leon Cooper story, and another movie as well. You're a historian. You are the president of a 501(c) nonprofit corporation. You are a man that really has a passion for life. And part of what is shared in your book, The Patent Jungle, which is exactly a perfect description of it, is something that I just think it's great. You have put it into print where people could actually read it. Now, this isn't a real big book. This is a very compact book that you have put together, so that someone could read it, could use it to make notes, and then understand the process that they have to go through. And I totally related to what you said in this book because my own husband has had to go through the patent process. And believe me, it is a nightmare. I've had clients that have had to go through the process, and they've had things stolen from them. I mean, the stories are all over the place about Number one, not understanding what it entails. Number two, the money that gets involved in it. And number three, having to sometimes deal with the ignorance of the people that are perhaps going through the process of saying, yes, your patent is valuable. No, it is not. There are three types of patents: the utility, the design, and the plant patents. Tell us the difference between those, and why are those three classifications so significant?
The most important of the three is utility patent. That's a product or an invention that serves to make an operation or a condition useful or helpful to improve the operation in some other way. And it must, of course, satisfy a number of conditions before the patent is granted, the most important being is it a useful product? Can it do something? Can you prove to the patent examiner that it works, that it actually does the job that you claim it does? So many patents applications fail on that score. And another our stumbling block is the fact that people will apply apply for a patent, despite the fact that it's already in existence or has been in written form in some form or other, not only in the United States, but over the world, and since the days of the Gutenberg Bible. Recently, the Supreme Court decided that human genes were not patentable. In other words, anything involving the natural process of nature or human beings are not patentable. So, unfortunately, people who apply for patent waste their money for failing to meet any of the three conditions I specified. That's why fewer than 50% of all people who apply for patents actually get their patents. So a lot of people waste their money hiring lawyers or falling for the siren song that you often see on TV or on the Internet by so-called invention development organizations that happily take your money and promise you the world and deliver nothing.
That's why I decided to write this book. Mm-hmm. That I know for a fact. I've had a number of clients that have gone through, quote-unquote, the specific organizations, and we won't mention any names, and by golly, I know of a young man who did something with a bow. This was many years ago. And as an adult, I met him, and he said it was stolen from him. They just misrepresented him, and it was confiscated. Now, this is something that I have heard stories about, Leon. You yourself invented a smoke detector tester, smoke in a can, and you've patented a number of things. Let us talk about, number one, being alert as an individual that may want to go through this process. There's a difference between a patent and a copyright, and I think most of my listeners might be aware of that. But when you have intellectual property, the copyright can apply to that. A patent is a whole different animal. It's a whole different scenario, and the process takes a long time. What's the first step, Leon? If someone feels that they have a patentable item,
the first step is to familiarize yourself with what is patentable. You can Google the patent office, and they'll give you a very lengthy explanation of the things that your product or your idea must satisfy before they'll consider giving you a patent. So that's where people, unfortunately, spend a lot of money, which they can, most people can ill afford, the thousands of dollars to get the patent application through the mill. And unfortunately, not enough information is known by the public regarding the length of time it takes. The patent office has a backlog of thousands upon thousands of applications who are lying there waiting for 2 years, usually, sometimes 3 or 5 years before they finally get to the end of the road where the patent, if they're lucky, and if they're smart, has been approved. So people are not aware of the fact that not only the bad news is that fewer than 50% get patents, and not enough knowledge is available to the patent applicant that it takes a minimum of 2 years, and often 3, 5, or more years, depending upon whether there are appeals involved. So just be prepared if you're if you think you have the world's greatest idea, be prepared for the bad news.
Mm-hmm. Now, you give very good information in your public in your presentation in the patent jungle, you talk about how there is actually a listing of patent agents and patent attorneys and agents by geographic region. Your book is loaded with information that if an individual feels that they have a better way of making a loaf of bread more efficiently, a manufacturing process, they can go in and they can research, number one, the information that they can get from the government patent office itself. You have the contact, you have the website information in there, so people can start there. And then if they wanted to get an attorney, you've got reference points that they can utilize. But you say, be aware, no matter what, do your homework, because one, it's going to save you money. Two, you need to become aware that there are other people with other ideas. There's well over 8 million filed patents, and I don't know how many are being filed every year. It's in the tens of thousands, isn't it, Leon?
Yeah, actually, the latest count is right now at the rate applications are made, in excess of 500,000 are filed every year, and every year it goes up. So there are more applicants every year. Unfortunately, a lot of these applicants have wasted their money because they fail to understand the acid test that makes to get the application approved finally.
You have a
I might point out,
Go ahead.
I originally wrote the book about twice its length, but I reviewed what I had first written, and I decided, well, a lot of this stuff is just chaff and needles verbiage, so I revised it and revised it again and finally boiled it down to the essentials that I think the inventor or other people who are interested in the patent process need to know in order to understand the game.
You bring up a point in the chapter on the application. You talk about how you're going to save money, number one, if you file electronically, but you bring up something that I was not aware of. It's called a disclosure document. Now, apparently, there's been a change with this. You said it was recently discontinued by the government, and it had not offered any protection to the inventor. So in its place, there is a provisional application or a non-provisional application. Go into that a little bit. Why does that make a difference?
Well, first of all, about the disclosure document, the patent office recently discontinued that process. Because the disclosure document does nothing more than introduce the patent office to an idea that the applicant has, but it has nothing whatsoever to do with finalizing the approval. And incidentally, if an invention development organization, and as you said, no names, there are a lot of these people out there who take advantage of the novice applicant or the person who thinks that he doesn't have to work anymore, he can retire and leave his day job because the invention development organization will promise him tens of thousands, maybe millions of dollars right away. So it's a swan song that is offered. And you can't. I wanted to make sure that the reader of my book understands the real world. You can't retire from your day job even after you get your patent, because there are all kinds of ways that you can be fooled. You pointed out one of these things, that there are people out there. I've never understood this myself, who aim to do you harm if you are a patent owner. They seek to steal your idea, to do all kinds of tricks to deceive you into releasing the patent that you've worked so hard to receive. That, unfortunately, there are a lot of bad people out there who take advantage of the novice, the person who doesn't understand the patent game as I did through hard experience, incidentally.
Mm-hmm. Now, part of this application process, you talk about filing a provisional application. You want to be sure that when you file for what you're doing, that this allows you to use the words patent pending. And many of us, I mean, we can all say that we have seen this on different products. There will be information there. They'll say patent pending. And that is a red flag. That is a red flag because someone has already filed. And, of course, a classic case is Alexander Graham Bell. I mean, there were other people that had a similar idea to his, and he got into the patent office just a short time before somebody else filed. And, of course, the patent was given to him because of the timing. So you have all kinds of points of information in here. The non-provisional application section in this chapter that you talk about, you bring up a point that I think is very significant. You say, at present, and it could be less than this right now, there's 11,531 employees, including 7,935 patent examiners. Now, if you think of the number that you just spouted out, 500,000 plus applications a year. That small amount of numbers of employees, and that includes not even 8,000 patent examiners, you've really got a challenge here going through all of this stuff, electronic filing, paper filing, it doesn't make any difference. The numbers are astronomical. And you get
I need to amplify a bit on the number of patent examiners. The term dysfunctional Congress, nobody will defend Congress except to say it's truly dysfunctional. The relatively few patent examiners that deal with the avalanche of applications, strictly the fault of Congress. Starting in the 90s, our representatives in Congress diverted or literally stole over $700 million that the Patent Office had collected in fees from applicants, and Congress diverted or stole the $700 million to fund other government activities, which is why the Patent Office finally is able to receive and collect its own fees now to staff and train a patent examiners. Only in the last year has a law been passed that denies Congress the right to divert or steal funds from the Patent Office.
Amazing. I was not aware of that at all. That is extortion of the highest degree within our own government. You have a quote in here by former Chief Judge Paul B. Michael, of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. He said, inventors must wait 3 years on average and often much longer. Some areas of technology may take as much as 6 years. And this time that you've had to wait is going to be shaved from a patent's period of protection because the patent clock starts ticking on the date the application is filed. Now, that is amazing. And once a patent time frame of protection, which I believe was an average of 25 years, once that's gone, you subtract 6 years from that, that's quite a chunk. Or maybe more. Maybe it's taken 10 years, so then you only have 15 years of protection. Well, someone might say, well, with the way technology is changing so rapidly, what difference does it make? Well, it makes a heck of a lot of difference.
I might point out, when Edison was active in the invention game, it took him, on average, 6 months when he filed an application to have it approved. Now it takes a minimum of 2 years. And as you pointed out, 3 or more years, depending upon the nature of the application or the content and the problems it involved in getting it approved. So it's quite a change from the days when Edison was active compared with inventors today.
Absolutely true. Now, you give a lot of do's and don'ts in your book, which I think is terrific. Someone could just use it as a checklist and go down line by line by line and say, I've done this, I've done this, I haven't done that. Now, one point you brought out, which I thought was very interesting, you say too many inventions, only one invention per application. And I thought, well, wouldn't that make sense? Why would you put more than one invention on an application? It doesn't make sense to me, just if nothing else for clarity. You only can put one per application, and you talk about you've got to have drawings, your drawings don't support the claims, and immediately the red flag comes up in my mind. How in the world, and you just brought this up, how in the world can they possibly train a patent examiner? You have so many people that have concepts and ideas that are so unique. There has been the experience on the part of many different individuals I've known. Their thinking was so different from what maybe somebody is able to perceive. They just don't get it. That has to be an incredible challenge. How did they get people that really can read things? I mean, you're going to have chemistry situations. You're going to have all kinds of variables that are going to be coming in. This is really a challenge.
Yeah, the Judge Mitchell that you mentioned, Donna, was the chief judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, which is the highest court in the land next to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the judge knows very well what he was talking about when he called the patent office, to use his exact term, dysfunctional. The judge as well, and the criticisms of others finally led to legislation that corrected serious deficiencies in the patent process, including removing the right of Congress to steal funds from the patent office. So we do have a better system than we've had for many years in the patent office, but still far from being the vehicle for allowing the patent process to go smoothly without any hitches compared with what it had been. So still many improvements are needed.
Absolutely. Leon, I wanted to ask you a question. I wanted to ask you, and there are the national patents, like for the United States, and then there are international patents. This is
That's something that
I think many people are going to have a challenge with, because they may have something that's patentable, but if they find that it's something that could have universal application, what do they do?
Well, you can... That's the dilemma that is faced by many people who finally get their patents. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people in other nations who are looking for the golden fleece, that is the U.S. Patent Office, the owner of a patent in the United States. And it's fairly common knowledge that these pirates will infringe upon the patent without any, with no impunity, without any penalty for having done so. That's why the U.S. government has instituted a program recently that hopefully will protect the U.S. Patent Office patent owner from the kinds of problems that you and I have just discussed. Infringement is more common, it seems, than granting a patent.
Mm-hmm. That's very
true.
There
are all kinds of people out there who aim to do the patent owner harm, unfortunately.
Well, they also look at it as a way all they have to do is make a slight adjustment, which is true, and you can't touch them. So infringement is a big thing. Now, I do know that China has a ruling as a nation. Everything belongs to the state. Nothing belongs to the individual. And this is something that has caused a lot of challenges. And I think there's many individuals in China that are wanting to change that policy. They want their ideas protected. But you make a comment about how, as a nation, America still leads the world in science and technology, regardless of all the blocks and the messes that politicians have created. However, you are concerned because the American individual, the American spirit, has always been one of innovation. How can we do it better? How can we do it more efficiently, effectively? How can we generally, one, create more jobs? Two, what we're going to want to do is to be able to just make the world a better place. And this is something that we need to honor and respect about this country, because that has enabled us to move forward in so many different ways. And it's really, really a challenge. And Leon, you've gone through this. How many patents do you have?
Four.
You have four. And what was the average time for you?
I had a number of other products that I developed that I decided I would not go and waste any money applying to the patent office, because it didn't satisfy all of the conditions that I outlined earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But the products that I developed without a patent are still being used throughout the world. I learned early in the game that not to spend money doing something that or trying to get a patent on something that I finally decided was not patentable. But I still went ahead with the development of these organizations. You touched on something a moment ago, Donna, which I think is very important. There is a group of characters out there that are called patent trolls, T-R-O-L-L-S. They're extortionists, pirates of the worst kind, who prey on startups, new companies that are getting organized. The startup look back, let's say about 20 or 30 years, Google was a startup. So was Apple a startup. Just think if somehow or other those companies had decided to forge ahead and ignore these pirates, these extortionists. If they had not gone ahead, think of the millions of people who would not have jobs had it not been for a successful Google or the success that Apple has achieved over the years. Startups are job incubators. You remember, of course, the last presidential campaign, job, job, jobs was the mantra. And unfortunately, these patent trolls go after these startups who are cash poor and unable to defend themselves. So they threaten court action against the startup and the startup without the funds available, for example, to defend themselves, simply sell their patent or decide to do nothing with a patent to begin with. That's the real tragedy, and unfortunately, our government has done nothing whatsoever to prevent these thieves, these extortionists, from making the billions of dollars they're making in extortionist fees that they get from the patent owner. I'm quite angry about this, because I had experience myself with the patent troll. Fortunately, I beat him before we actually went to court.
Leon, your book, The Patent Jungle, is a powerhouse. It really is. And for those of you listening, this is not a real thick book. This is a book that you should have a pen or pencil and make notes. If you know of anyone that is wanting to develop a patent, Leon Cooper is a man who has walked the walk. He is an inventor. He has done so many different things in his life, and he is willing to share his knowledge with you through this book, The Patent Jungle, The Inventor's Friendly User Guide, and his website. If you want to find out more, go to patentjungle.net, patentjungle.net. Leon, thank you so much for having time for me today.
The book is on sale at Amazon Books, Books A Million, and Powell's Books, and other major outlets. Price is $10. And quantity discounts are available, of course, for those who seek to buy more than one copy. Donna, I want to thank you for obviously an extremely important, well-researched interview that you always did when you interviewed me before one of my other. Many thanks again for your enlightening and in searching important questions. Really appreciate talking to you, Donna.
It's been a pleasure, Leon. This is Donna Sebo, The Patent Jungle, The Inventor's Friendly User Guide. Go to patentjungle.net. Donna Sebo here. We're coming back with more good things to share with you. Don't go away. Lots of good stuff coming. Leon Cooper, thank you again for being my guest. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com.
Or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. It will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, yes, we're opening up those phone lines, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, when those phone lines open up, you're welcome to call in. Give me your first name or initial. I'll give you information about yourself, your life, what's going on. And then afterwards, you're welcome to ask me about anything that is important to you, about anyone, any situation, any condition, and I'll give you the best that I've got. This is Donna Sebo again at 888-627-6008. Well, tomorrow we've got a fabulous guest, and her name is Mary Rockwood Lane. This is a topic that I really believe in. It's healing with the arts. Now, in so many of our school systems, we are diminishing. We go through cycles like this, where they diminish music, they diminish dance, they diminish the exploration of the arts on so many different levels. This is vitally important. It has been proven, even scientifically, how art, music, dance, whatever format that you love, can actually promote healing and wellness within a person, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. It is so empowering. And this is a wonderful subject matter, because I think when we can come in contact with that, we'll realize that we can empower our own environment in a marvelously creative way. So that's what we're going to be talking about. And then we're going to be talking with S. Jan. We're going to be talking about, on Friday, Malignant, how cancer becomes us. Now, this is a topic that she has researched to such a phenomenal degree. It is absolutely amazing. And everybody hears about the big C. Well, we're going to have a different perspective on this and get some facts about what really has made a difference and what hasn't made a difference, and why we need to be aware that sometimes what we hear via media is not necessarily the real truth that's occurring in everyday life. What can we do about it? Well, we can check it out. I had someone ask me not too long ago why it was I had such a passion for books. I honestly don't have an answer for you. I honestly don't know. In fact, I think that's spurring me to perhaps get involved in getting some genealogy done. Maybe 14 centuries ago, there was somebody in my family tree that was a historian or a researcher. I don't know. But I am absolutely enamored of the wonderful, wonderful knowledge that is contained in books, and there's a lot of them that's mediocre and maybe not so hot. But the fact is that in the many years of my doing this show, my world has expanded because of the variety of content that I come in touch with. And it's everything to maybe fixing a better pot roast to quantum physics. And I just am so grateful for everyone that I've had on my show and those that I haven't even been able to have on my show for various reasons, for them bringing a part of their lives, a part of their understanding into a written format. I had someone say to me not too long ago, oh, books are just going to disappear. I said, you're out of your mind. Oh, yeah, everything's going to go electronic. I said, you're also out of your mind. Because there is a reality. The printed word is very powerful. It makes a difference. Do we have different applications that can be utilized? Yes. But I can guarantee you the book itself is always going to be needed. It's a companion. It's a friend that never ages. It is willing to be opened at any time and perused through. And I really encourage the love of reading, because it can open you to worlds that you never knew existed. I remember when I was in the sixth grade, the school I went to had their library. They had not had a library on the school premises. And when I was in the sixth grade, the library was opened. And the very first book I checked out of that library, it stays in my memory because I forgot to return it on time. It was about a blizzard that occurred in the Midwestern area of the United States and how people were starving to death because the blizzard lasted, the conditions, the whiteout conditions, lasted not just for a few days, but for weeks. And I still retain that story in my memory because the magic of that book, that very first book out of the library, and I'd been reading since the age of five, but that very first book out of the library took me into a world that, being a Californian, who knew about blizzards? I didn't. What was it all about? What was it like for the animals? What was it like for the people? And the writer was so good that I lived their experience through the written word. And that is still a part of my experience today. And that is what opens up to you. You realize that this world that we live in is not contained in a little pillbox. There's an unlimited expression of experiences that any of us can have. And when you open your mind to exploring a new venue, a brand new venue, something that you've never looked at before, go to your local library. Go to your local library. Go into an area that you've never, ever been in and say, I'm going to check this out. Read about a culture. Read about preparing food a different way. Read about mechanics. Read about quantum physics. Realize that there is this experience of life that is so vast. It is so magnificent that the more you are willing to open yourself up to learning through the written word, the more interesting you become, first of all, because you'll have something to talk about. And number two, you're going to have a curiosity that maybe you had as a child and it's been drummed out of you because of everyday living. And you go, wow, this is exciting. It could spur you into a whole new career. It could spur you into integrating into a club or an organization you wanted to know more about. Or like my guest, Leon Cooper, you might come up with an idea that's going to make living a better experience for someone. Someone came up with an idea of how to adapt vehicles to assist people who are handicapped. Every day, there is someone that's going through an experience, and they say, this needs to be changed. You may be that person that is able to bring that change into place. If that isn't exciting to you, I don't know what can be. Because I think you're exceptional. I think you're just marvelous. And you never know the difference you're going to make in someone else's life, in some other animal's life, in some other aspect of understanding the environment. There is so great a need. And you all are very significant in that experience. Let me talk to you for just a moment about invention. Glasses that reverse color blindness. Even though it's a relatively small percentage of the population, color blindness is a real difficult thing. It especially affects men. 1 in 10 men, it's estimated, have a problem distinguishing red and green colors. But guess what? Someone said there's got to be a way of dealing with this. Questioning, how can we make it better? What can we do? How do we do it? It has to be cost-effective. It has to be something that's easy to utilize. It is something that will be accepted by the consumer. This is what they found out. Purple tinted glasses, the power of color. Now, these glasses are designed to help medical professionals spot veins under the skin. And they are called the OxyISO glasses, OXY-ISO glasses. These glasses were developed for medical professionals. The doctors found they had a side effect, something they did not even imagine would be possible. Those doctors that were colorblind found they were able to spot vibrant reds and greens for the very first time. Now, there is this disclaimer. It may not work for everyone. And people that get these glasses that have colorblindness are told not to drive with them because the lens boosts the ability to see red-green colors at the expense of yellow-blue ones. Do you know they're for sale? They're not exactly inexpensive. They're $300 a pair. But, wow, what was designed for one aspect ended up being utilized for something else. Totally unexpected. Look at all the things that were designed for the space program that ended up being incorporated into our everyday lives. It's amazing. That is what is so important, and it happens with people like you. This is Donna Sebo. When we come back, I've got some fun things to share with you. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Again, send your story to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Open lines at 888-627-6008. Innovation often is forced upon us. Sometimes we lose jobs or we have conditions that affect us that require that we think differently. Now, I've got some examples for people who have been wanting to find a new job or you're looking for something else. These are a couple of individuals. One lady's name is Eileen, and believe it or not, she's making $27,000 plus a year being a customer service representative. Many businesses realize how important that is, and she had skills. She's a mom of two children, and do you know that well over 100,000 people have started to get involved with doing businesses at home just for customer service, as a customer service rep for a company? They will represent catalogs or other businesses, and by golly, this is terrific. You know how many times you've called a company? There's a company that I do business with, and I went to call their customer service. It was in Malaysia. One, it was hard for me to understand this person that was on the other line. And I got a bit upset with this American company that was using Malaysian individuals when we have so many individuals here in the United States that are looking for work. Well, there are those people that are taking up the slack in many ways, and a lot of companies are saying, we're in the U.S., we want to support the U.S. economy, so this is what we are doing. Now, how she got started, she found out about a company called WorkingSolutions.com. Now, this is a call center agency that hires home-based workers. You're given a test. She qualified handsomely, and the only investment she had to make was her headset. Her headset cost her $100. Now, one of the requirements will be No barking dogs in the background. You have to have a place that's totally isolated from everyone. And I know of a young man who did this. He started off in something like this because he couldn't find work anywhere. This was a highly skilled, highly trained computer specialist. And so he got involved with a company that was offering assistance, problem-solving needs for people dealing with computers. He started off at what was the minimum wage. He said it was no big deal. I couldn't get a job. He had been unemployed for 3 years. His unemployment ran out. He said, I've been looking and looking and looking. I took this job because there was nothing else available. He ended up becoming a manager, making a very good salary of $50,000 plus a year. Now, this didn't happen overnight for him. And he said, I had to make sure I had a quiet space, no other interruptions, no street noises, anything else. And he did that. And he said he goes to work every day. Nobody cares whether he's in his pajamas or not or whether he's even brushed his teeth. He said, I'm there at work. But he said, I prepare myself. I go to work. I have my break times. Everything is electronically recorded. And he said, I'm making a wonderful income. And I was promoted to a management positioning, he said, which is just what I love. And he said, I'm using the skills that I have worked so hard with. And he said, here I'm working for a company that's doing such a good job. So you can do that. Also, for those of you that are in the teaching industry, becoming an online tutor. I have a friend. She is Russian, and she teaches Russian. And she has classes, online classes, that enable her to generate an income. And there's a woman, Diana Latlep. She is a former high school English teacher from Missouri. She said she loves to teach, absolutely loves it, but she has 3 children. She doesn't want to be separated from her youngsters. And so after she had her 3rd child, which is about 7 or 8 years ago, she said, I wanted to stay home. I wanted to be able to earn an income, take care of my children and my family. And she has the best of both worlds. She said she knew she had to continue to supplement her family's income. Her husband is working. So she went to a company called Tutor.com. It's an agency that matches students with virtual tutors. That's right, virtual tutors. She sets her own schedule. She logs in with the children, and they have grammar lessons, essay writing lessons, and the tutors earn anywhere from $10 to $14 an hour or more, dependent on what they are teaching. The kids love it. They absolutely love it. Here you've got some options that maybe you would never have even considered, and there's so many more out there. It's just being open to whatever opportunities may come your way. Well, I know we've just got a couple of more minutes left, and I wanted to share with you something that I think is just wonderful. Oops, well, I don't know that I'm going to have the time to do it. I've got some wonderful recipes. Of course, this month is Thanksgiving month. And during this month, there are always preparations. I don't know about you, but it's always, what are we going to do for Thanksgiving? How do we deal with the leftovers? Well, in coming programs, we're going to be able to share some ideas and concepts with you that I think you will really, really enjoy. But other than that, I wanted to go back a little bit to our guest before we close out today, Leon Cooper. This is a gentleman whose life has taken him into many different venues of experience. And what he has done is said, I want to pass along the knowledge that I have. Have you ever thought what kind of a legacy you might want to leave? What is it that you would like for people to know, understand? Maybe it's your family you'd like to leave this legacy to. It might be like what Leo is doing, saying, life is full of opportunity. Reach for the stars, but understand there's an aspect of reality you're going to have to deal with. And he's done that through his writing. Every person I've ever had on the show, because they've become an author, they've ended up leaving a legacy that may or may not touch millions of people's lives. You can do the same thing. Keep in mind, you are significant. You make a difference because of the person you are. Always be expanding yourself, and remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. Nobody, and I mean nobody, has the right to dominate that or to take that right away from you. Never forget that. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be talking tomorrow, and I look forward to having you join me at my broadcasting table. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are on this glorious planet of ours. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.